Good morning, everyone. How are you all? Yeah, good. Isn't it lovely to be in church this morning? And what a great service we've been able to share in already. This week at Humeridge has been a really big week. On Monday, we had staff training for the day, and we had a fabulous day learning and sharing and praying together. On Tuesday morning, we hosted the City Women Leaders Breakfast here, and some police officers from the Domestic Violence Unit came and spoke to us about their work. On Wednesday, we hosted the Toowoomba Ministers Association here for lunch. Thursday, Friday, all of the usual events happened here at church. And yesterday, we celebrated with Kelsey Parker and Dylan Pakalis at their wedding. So it was a fantastic day, and we have had a fantastic week. I get to start a new mini-series, and it seems very ironic that it's called Be Still. In the midst of all the busyness, it seems almost ridiculous as Christmas is coming upon us and we all know that we're going to get busier. The psalm we're about to read this morning is Psalm 46, and it's written by the sons of Korah. During the time of King David, the sons of Korah became great leaders in choral and orchestral music in the tabernacle. These men were descendants of Korah from the tribe of Levi. God set aside the Levites out of the tribes of Israel for full-time service to him and the children of Israel as they traveled through the wilderness. The Levites had the responsibility for the tabernacle. They played an important role in thanksgiving services and in the pageantry when the Ark of the Covenant was later brought to Jerusalem. David formed an elaborate organization of song, instrumental music, and prophecy through these men. There are 11 psalms in our Bible that are attributed to the sons of Korah. They are beautiful psalms that express great gratitude and humility to an awesome God. They express deep longing and deep devotion. And they include fantastic lines, things that we are really familiar with, like, "As the deer pants for the water, so my soul longs for you." And a line from the psalm that we're about to read, "God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in time of trouble." So I'm going to ask Dina Gainsford if she'll come forward, and she's going to read for us Psalm 46. And because we're not going to sing at this point, I'm going to ask that you all stand as a mark of respect as we listen to God's word being read. Will you stand?
Psalm 46. God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in time of trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though the waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with their surging, there is a river whose stream may glad the city of God, the holy place where the Most High dwells. God is with her, she will not fall. God will help her at the break of day. Nations are in uproar, kingdoms fall. He lifts his voice, the earth melts. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Come and see what the Lord has done, the desolation he has brought on the earth. He makes war cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. He says, "Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth." The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress.
Will you be seated, please? Psalm 46 is often labelled as a psalm of trust. And the verse that we're going to concentrate on this morning is verse 10. And the message says it beautifully. The message says, "Step out of the traffic. Take a long, loving look at me, your high God, above politics, above everything. Be still." The Hebrew word that's used here is rapha, And its translation is actually cease striving. It comes as an instruction at the end of this battle psalm. It sets out the power and glory of God. And in the light of God's amazing power, it says to us, be still. Cease striving. Stop fretting. Trust me. Because I will be exalted amongst the nations of the earth. Trust me. The human race has a history of not trusting God. And even we, as followers of Jesus, don't always practice trusting God. But we rather rely on ourselves. Proverbs 3, 5 and 6 says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, submit to him and he will make your paths straight. But instead of trusting in him, we rely on ourselves. We pride ourselves in being self-sufficient and in control. We'd like to be masters of our own destiny. Since the beginning of time, we have been tempted to play God. Let's read Genesis chapter 3. It's in the Message version. The serpent was clever, more clever than any wild animal that God had made. And he spoke to the woman and he said, do I understand that God told you not to eat from any of the trees in the garden? And the woman said to the serpent, oh, not at all. We can eat from the trees in the garden. It's only about the tree in the middle of the garden that God said, don't eat it and don't touch it or you'll die. And the serpent told the woman, you won't die. God knows that the moment you eat from that tree, you'll see what's really going on. You'll be just like God, knowing everything, ranging for all the way from good to evil. And when the woman saw that the tree looked good for eating and realized what she would get out of it, that she would know everything, she took and ate the fruit and then gave some to her husband, and he also ate. And immediately the two of them did see what was really going on. They saw themselves naked, and they sewed fig leaves together as makeshift clothes for themselves. The temptation that Satan dangled in front of her was that she would become like God. And it was so appealing that she took the bait. The perfect relationship that Adam and Eve had had with God was broken. And so, with a broken relationship, mankind set about to be master of their own destinies. We continually create ways to make our lives better. And we are made in the image of Creator God. And so it's natural that we do create things. In 1370, the first public clock tower was erected by a German engineer in Paris. And the whole city could now see exactly what time it was. And the world shifted from managing time naturally by the rise and fall of the sun and the changing of the seasons to managing time artificially. We began to measure time and to live to time. In 1879, Thomas Edison invented the light bulb. This invention increased human productivity and lengthened the time that we could work. Before this time, it was recorded that people on average slept between 10 and 11 hours a night. They would sleep when the sun went down and they would wake when the sun rose. The latest research that we have from Compare the Market found that 1 in 10 Australians surveyed were getting just 5 hours sleep a night or less. Only 2/3 of those who were surveyed were getting the recommended 7 to 9 hours sleep a night. And we know that with lack of sleep often comes a greater chance of developing chronic disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, depression. We also know that sleep deprivation can reduce our alertness or slow our reaction times, and it could lead to potentially harmful situations. But we love to create light. We love to light up our homes and our streets and our cities. We love beautiful lights. And with Christmas being so close, I noticed that already lights are springing up in people's front yards and on their houses. And very soon, crowds of people will flood through Queen's Park to see the light show, the light display that we have created, our beauty and we will marvel at it. And our lights drown out the lights of heaven. Have you been out in the country lately and looked up into the sky? A sky unpolluted by electric light? The vastness of the heavens is amazing. Psalm 8:3 says, "When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have set in place, what is mankind that you are mindful of them? Human beings that you care for them." Our attempts at beauty pale into insignificance when we consider the heavens. The 1960s were a boom for time-saving technologies. This was supposed to give us more leisure time, more rest. We have dishwashers and microwaves and clothes dryers, and it was predicted that these devices would simplify our lives and free us up to enjoy less work and less stress and more time for ourselves. But instead, we have repurposed that time. And instead of being free to rest and relax, we have become busier. In 1973, the first cell phone was invented. And no longer would we be attached to the wall by that curly cord or able to make calls only inside our homes or offices. In 1992, the first smartphone was created, and in 2020, the modern smartphone came on the market, a phone with cameras that take professional quality photographs, that stream music and videos and games effortlessly. And in addition, we have 24/7 access to social media that has changed our relationships and our interactions forever. The way that we view news has changed. Who needs to watch the 6 o'clock news when we can get it 24 hours a day from our favourite app or from social media, fake or real? The iPhone has revolutionised communication and invaded our relationships. Research has estimated that the average user of the iPhone looks at their phone 150 times a day. In review.org, a group of Aussies were asked the following questions. And 48% of them experienced anxiety when they leave their phone at home. 67% say they find themselves scrolling mindlessly through the day. 75% of them sleep with their phone next to them. 78.5% of Aussies check their phones within 10 minutes of waking up. 56% say they couldn't last a week without their phone. 76% check their phone in bed. 60% check their phone while they're on the toilet. 19% say that they check their phone while driving. 56% have texted someone in the same room as them. 47% say they feel anxious when their phone battery drops below 20%. And 53% say they wouldn't be able to continue their day-to-day life if they lost their smartphones. But instead of gaining leisure time and freeing us up to have more holidays, we have become slaves to our clock, enamored by the beauty of our own creations and addicted to the pursuit of ourselves and in love with social media. Our attempts at being in control have left us busier than ever, and the still small voice of God has been drowned out. So how do we, as followers of Jesus, live well in this world and hear the voice of God? A busy pastor once asked the late Dallas Willard, "What do I need to do to become the person that I want to be?" His reply was this: "You must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life." And he added, "There is nothing else. Hurry is the great enemy of the spiritual life in our day." There's even a term, hurry sickness, coined by two cardiologists about 50 years ago. John Mark Comer suggests that there are about 10 symptoms of hurry sickness, and they are these: irritability, hypersensitivity, restlessness, workaholism, emotional numbness, out-of-order priorities, lack of care for your body, escapist behaviours, slippage of spiritual disciplines, and isolation. Can you relate to any of those? Yeah. So how do we avoid hurry sickness? How do we develop a deep trust in God? Remember what the message said in verse 10? step out of the traffic. Take a long, loving look at me, your high God, above politics, above everything. Jesus modeled what it was like to be still and to rely on God. He lived an intentional and still interruptible life. He formed rhythms of prayer and of solitude and of service. He was God, but he made time to rest and to pray and to rely on his Father in heaven. We read about him withdrawing for prayer. He spent time fasting and praying. And when he heard the news of the death of his cousin, he withdrew to grieve and to pray. In Luke, we read, Jesus went to the mountainside to pray and he spent the night praying to God. When's the last time we did that? If Jesus needed to do it, if the rhythm of prayer and solitude and reliance on God was important to him, then it should be important for us. And Graham's going to spend some time next week delving into that a little more deeply. If these rhythms help us develop a deeper relationship with God and a deeper trust in him, then we do need to cultivate these rhythms. When we put God into his rightful place, our perspective changes. When God is at the centre, our needs and our wants are filtered by him. The dominant force that gives our life directions and purpose becomes God. We can view others through the lens of Jesus. My impatience can be replaced by Jesus' compassion and kindness. What Adam and Eve did at the beginning of time when they broke our relationship with God, Jesus undid at the cross. He paid the price for our willful disobedience and he restored us to a right relationship with God. I want you to cast your mind back for a moment, if you can, to when you learned to swim. If you have little ones, you probably are at the swimming pool once a week at the moment, watching them learn to swim. I remember the catch in my breath and the feeling of rising nervousness. What if I go under? What if I get water up my nose? What if I get it in my ears? I remember the fear of not being able to breathe and not being able to touch the bottom. And then my dad, standing out a little too far from the wall, just beyond the pale blue sparkling shallows, where the water changed colour, becomes dark blue. In the water after the drop-off, where I know I really can't touch the bottom, he is saying, trust me, I've got you, you're okay, you have to let go of the edge, you have to kick off, I will not let you drown, I love you, I will catch you, cease striving. And I do it. And I'm still mildly terrified, but I push out, and not because I believe in me, but because I trust in him. I know him and I know that he loves me. I know that he has my life in his hands and he will do everything that he can to make sure that I am okay. This week, I went to my four-year-old granddaughter's swimming lessons. Lots of little people in thickly chlorinated warm water. She did a great job of sliding into the water and kicking her little legs and blowing bubbles and pushing out into the water towards her teacher. My daughter-in-law Ellie and I sat on the edge of the pool and Ellie was saying that Lily loves her teacher. She's a lovely, kind lady and Lily feels safe with her. Her teacher was away for a couple of weeks on vacation recently and a young man took her place. He was competent and careful and fully trained and trustworthy, but Lily freaked out and she became more nervous. So much so that she refused to go back for her lesson the following week because her teacher wasn't there. She didn't feel safe. Now, Lily had the same ability with her favourite teacher as she did with this stranger. She could do exactly the same things, but she didn't trust him. She was nervous and she was worried that she wasn't safe. She began to look at her own ability rather than at the teacher. And we do the same with God. We rely on ourselves and all we have accomplished and we forget who is really in charge. We forget his power and his might. We forget that he created us and that he loves us and we forget to trust him. Like Adam and Eve, We have replaced God. We want to be God. We want to be in control. God has proven himself over and over that he is faithful. He is just and he can be trusted. He has my best interests at heart. But splashing around in the shallows for the rest of my life, playing with my prayers and keeping everything safe and small, pretending that I am in control, no longer works. It might have worked, and it served me well when I was a child, but not now. I need to let go. I need to stop striving. I need to look up and see that it is God who is in control. Trust. Trust him. He knows the future. Trust that he knows what's best for you. Trust him. He knows where you are going, and he is there already. He is everlasting. He is faithful. He is love. The water where he is standing might be dark blue, and the waves might be high, but he is there. He is stretching out his arms and he is saying, come on, trust me. Stop resisting. You can do it. And that's what God is saying to us in Psalm 46. Look around at all that I am doing. I am your refuge and strength, your ever-present help in times of trouble. I am with you. Stop striving. I have everything in control. I've got you and I love you and you are safe. We are such smart people. We can make light, we can tell time, we can instantaneously get news from all over the world, but we cannot beat death. We cannot stop the sun from shining or the years from marching on. We can't force our children to follow Jesus, and we can't reverse the aging process. We can't beat every disease. We are not God. And when we realize that, when we humble ourselves and trust him, when we make him the center of our lives, we can cease striving. When my dad caught me in the dark blue water, my immediate response was to hold tight to him and to relax and to breathe. I was safe. I was okay. I was not going to drown. And so over and over, we would do the same thing and I would become more confident. I would laugh and splash and dive. He was there and I was safe and my confidence grew until the time I could swim further and deeper and launch out without fear at all. To learn to trust God, we have to trust God. When we put our trust in God, we can cease striving. Even when the storm rages, we can be still and cease striving. Even when life is hard, we can be still, cease striving. Even when your children are struggling, you can be still and cease striving. When work is frustrating and when your closest relationships are your hardest relationships, you can cease striving and trust God. Even when our health is failing, we can stop striving and trust God. Becoming a true Christ follower involves the admission that God is God and I am not. That Jesus took on his shoulders the punishment that I deserved and that you deserved. He died a cruel death and then he punched the back of death, a big hole, and he rose. Jesus alone holds the key to salvation. Philip Yancey said, I have found that the most important purpose of prayer may be to let ourselves be loved by God. So before your feet hit the floor in the morning, thank God for the day and his presence in it. Ask God to help you see him in the faces of those you encounter and in the world around you, at home, at work, at school. Be still. Fall into the arms of the God who created you and desperately wants to sustain you. As I close this morning, we're going to practice being still. Because let's face it, we need the practice. So just stay where you are, and you can close your eyes if that helps you concentrate, and say what you need to say to God. C.S. Lewis said this, pray the way you pray, not the way you think you should pray. The only way to get prayer wrong is to try and get it right. If you are praying, then you are already doing it right. Inika is going to sing to us while we do this. And when she's finished, we're all going to stand and sing our last song of worship. At the end of the service, there'll be a team of people down the front who would love to pray for you or with you. No one can make your prayer life better but you. No one can read your Bible for you. No one can trust God on your behalf. No one can become a Christian for you. God doesn't have grandchildren. So let's take a step in the process of ceasing to strive. Let's become still and know that it's God who is God.